Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's the first one of the year. It's for January 12th, and it's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me for the fifth year of JBW is Jim Allen. How's it going, buddy? Happy New Year.
Fifth year? I just met you, it seems.
What's your name again?
You're John. I know that. And I'm Jim. So this is Jim and John, no longer the NFL coaching brothers.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Now one's in college. Yeah, at Michigan. Excellent.
That's right.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. Well, this Jim ain't going back to college anytime in the immediate future.
Okay.
Not unless Michigan pays him $5 million.
To coach baseball. I can see.
Yeah. And a coach sitting around talking on the podcast.
You and Jim Abbott could coach baseball.
We could do.
All right. Well, welcome to the new year. With all that's going on in the world, it's a real pleasure each week to sit down with you and talk Japanese baseball. And I appreciate your efforts and also the work of Michael Westbay. He's always getting us online and getting us up on iTunes. And, of course, we love the listeners. And thanks so much to One World Sports for their loyal support as we enter the third year with the agreement with them. So thank you very much in New York City. On this week's show, we've got a chat with former Hiroshima Carp and Yakult Swallow and Oryx Buffalo. Wow, that's hard to get out. Greg the Hitman LaRocca, and then we're going to talk about the Hall of Fame inductees and Takashi Toritani. So let's come out swinging.
Clearing the bases.
Okay, John, you've got some trivia for me, I gather.
It's easy. It's arbitrary,
easy.
But it's easy.
Easy.
It's arbitrary, easy. Though. But I think you know this because...
Oh, you always say that, though.
Maybe I just think too much of you. Okay, maybe you don't know this.
Well, stop thinking so much of me.
All right. In honor of Greg LaRocca being on the show... Who is the all-time leader in being hit by pitches in NPB?
Wow.
Oh,
if you had asked me this in December, I would have known.
Where'd you drop the ball? When the calendar kicked off?
Well, you know, memory works like that. It's when I'm looking at it, I remember, and then the next day I forget. I'm a stat guy, as many people know, so they figure I remember these numbers like Wayne Grassick, I don't. That's why I have a computer.
Okay.
The computer remembers things. I don't.
All right. Who's your best guest?
I'd say Kazuhiro Kiyohara.
Gosh. See, you knew it. You just didn't know you knew it. That is the answer.
Well, that's what I thought. That's what I was thinking, but I wasn't certain.
Okay. Mr. Kiyohara was hit 196 times between 1986 and 2008, over 2,338 games. Now, the reason I said in honor of Greg LaRocca is because he was plunked 109 times, so that's 196 for the all-time leader, but 109 times from 2004 to 2010, 583 games.
Yeah, about one-fourth as many games.
One-fourth as many games.
Indeed.
And that is your trivia for the first show of the year.
Oh, wow. And it's a hit.
And you got it right. Awesome. See, I knew that you knew it.
I did know that one. I'm shocked.
No, you're Jim, but that's okay.
Okay. Well, speaking of shocked, imagine my surprise when I'm in San Diego in December and I see all these old NPB guys and all these old former foreign players from Japan who are working as scouts. Now, I knew many of these guys were working as scouts. But it's like, it's just wonderful. These guys come up to you and talk. And one of the guys, on the first day I was there, I saw the Oryx crew.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg LaRocca was there. And we hadn't spoken in a couple of years. So I said, you know, I'd like to do the podcast. And he says, you know, like, now's a good time. But it was like, it was part of the conversation. And I figured this is a chance to talk to him. I never know if he'll be available, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just sort of went right into it. And I said, this is good stuff. And halfway through, I just started taping it. And okay. So anyway, we were standing next to the Oryx scouting staff in the lobby of the Manchester Grand Hyatt Hotel in San Diego, where the winter meetings are being held. And it's just packed with people. It's like, the world's largest casual wedding reception just ended. And there's all these people flooding through the hotel, and you know, it's, and Jim Harbaugh would be very happy there because it's very khaki. And sorry for the NFL reference. That's John's specialty, but it's really super laid back, but the place is just packed.
Right.
It's like a convention of guys on their way to the golf course. So anyway, but they're all standing around all day. And so imagine my surprise. I see Greg LaRocca and the Oryx people, and we talk. And so, it was really a chance to catch up and see what Greg is doing and, you know, learn about what he's doing out of baseball and get some of his insights to things here and there in Japanese and Major League Baseball. So let's hear what Greg LaRocca has to say.
You still have that pain that you had, and then you had new pains. And it's like, you know, when I retired, I all the pain stopped. And it was like, wow. So I loved it. I was like, I wake up every morning and I don't have a backache or my knee or my arm or my, you know, it's like I feel healthy. And that was the part that I liked. I enjoyed.
When you say, you know, speak of the accumulated pain, I envision you kind of like a pinball machine with the lights going on and up.
Oh,
every time,
gosh,
you get hit, you know, there's a new bell or a buzzer going off.
Oh yeah, I had a lot of surgeries. I mean, I think I had 4 in Japan, you know, and then I think 10 or 11, you know, my career. So that's a lot of coming back and a lot of rehab and stuff like that. So my body was definitely taxed, and I played, you know, all out and dove and did all that stuff, and that's hard on your body. So, you know, the idea that I could retire and still stay in the game and scout, you know, I like that. So
Do those two things come together at the same time?
Yeah.
Was there a discussion? What do you with Oryx?
Yeah. They wanted to keep me around, and how would we do it? And so it was a nice transition for me. You know, it was nice. I didn't have to say goodbye to baseball, which, you know, it's your passion. You didn't do it for 17 years, and it's like I love doing it. So I'm excited that I can be a part,
okay,
you know, and so letting go was easy because I had something to.
So tell me a little bit about what your routine is as a scout for the Oryx. I'm going to try not to say blue wave.
You know, we have to come up with, I mean, we're building it as we go. So, you know, now we're getting new ideas, and you know, Kato-san's bringing some new ideas. But basically, each month we have a new list of players that we have to send in, and I send in video and reports, and then, you know, we discuss what guys we like, and then we we all go see. You know, I have one big trip where we see all the guys right before we make a decision.
You and who else?
Yeah, and then it's, you know, like we had Yamamoto-san, and, you know, Kato-san comes out and
right.
last year,
like
now.
Cross-checking.
So they want to see, you know, the players personally.
Okay, are you the only guy in the States?
No, Matt Slater.
I don't know him.
He's with the Cardinals. So
okay.
He is. No, he's a guy. I guess he's my boss.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I report to him, and he knows all, you know, what all the inside scoop on all the players.
Oh, okay.
You know, which, you know, how many more, you know, all the contract stuff. You know,
okay.
he can handle with that, which I'm still learning about that.
So do you get a list? You got to come up with a list,
yeah,
of players.
Right.
Oh,
right.
That's all right.
So
that's,
yeah, it's fun, you know, and it's weird being on the other side. You know, I'm like, I know what it was like being a player, so I don't want to be like, oh, he sucks.
Did you think about going to scout school?
Yeah, actually, I tried, and they didn't let me in.
Because you're not with a Japanese school?
Yeah.
There is actually another scout school. I know Dan Evans runs one, but it's like an online kind of thing. But,
oh, really?
But, you know, it's weird that you can't get in.
I know. I tried to get in last year, but I think this year we'll try to get in again.
Right.
You know, because they said that...
You're not the National Association.
The team, they were like, yeah, because I was going to get in through the Cardinals. But the
right.
Cardinals, I think two scouts from each organization can go.
Right.
And so they already used
them. So you are with the Cardinals as well?
No, the Cardinals are...
Oryx's partner. That I didn't even know that.
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
I mean, he's working for the Cardinals first. And then so
right.
he helps us.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So
that's the relationship you have. What do the Cardinals get out of that? I knew you got Brandon Dixon. That was a pretty that was pretty sweet.
So, well, you know, that's kind of where it's, you know, we're learning more what type of player, you know, will fit. And so that's not, like, on paper, this guy looks like he'd do. But you have to go and kind of see him and talk to the guys around him and see if he really is a good fit for Japan. Because, as you know, it's a culture, you know, adjustment as well as baseball adjustment. So if you're not happy there, you're not going to play well.
Right.
And the guys that aren't happy, you know, and, you know, you want to pick from the guys that are have the best chance of having success.
Right.
So it's not all paper. You know, it's a lot of, you know, getting to know who the person is and talking to them. And so that's a lot of kind of background and
what are the red flags when you're looking at a player? You must have some. You see this and you, oh my gosh.
For me, if you argue with the umpire, like you do that, you're going to have problems over in Japan. It's like, it's all based on respect. So, you know, I mean, everybody makes mistakes, and you can't be calling out the umpires when they make a mistake, because then they're going to come and get you. It's like, you're not bigger than the game. The game is what it is, you know, and so when I see a guy, I mean, yell at the umpire. I mean, you can talk to the umpire and kind of look back. And when a guy yells at him, but not yell at him. Any anger in that sense, that's a red flag for me.
No public shows of outrage.
Yeah. And that's kind of, you know, you can follow what you want, but, you know, it's definitely disrespect in Japan. You know, he can be kind of a hothead here, and okay, I'll deal with that. But in Japan, I don't. That's a
On the other side, when you see something in a player and you say, "Oh man, I want that guy," are there anything kind of repeating things that you are looking for in a positive sense?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, the guys that are still hungry, you know, and have, you know, the excitement for the game, and, you know, they've been kind of boxed out of kind of getting their chance, you know, and they're still hungry. Those are the guys that you really look for, and you could see them, you know, they stick out, and you're just like, yes, you know, and so you see that, and you want, and at the same time, they have the excitement, but they're reserved because they're not arguing with the umpire, you know, so it's a fine line, but those are the things that I kind of stand out in my mind, you know.
One of the things that I talk with a lot of the players is, I think one of the secrets to success is being able to put up with sort of a trivial nonsense.
Yes.
Having a large tolerance capacity.
Yeah. To go with the flow.
Yeah, and if things don't make sense, you just got to kind of shuck it off and move on.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's kind of the why I put so much stress on the umpire thing, because the umpire, everybody's going to make mistakes, and so you're like, you know, it's okay, you know. Was that far out? Okay. No, and that's it. But if he just talks to him, but if he pushes the system, like, how'd you make a mistake? Oh, my gosh. You know, then I feel like he's going to come to Japan and be like, why do you do this? What is this? And get upset at the little things. And so it's going with the flow. You know, it's like you're going downstream. Like, don't swim up.
Okay, now you spoke before a little bit about how Japan changed you. How did
Well, I mean,
some examples,
you know,
and what
culturally,
it was
basically the first time I played 10 years in the States and been all over, you know, played in Mexico, played in Canada and all over the country. And I really didn't know to go anywhere.
Okay.
You know? And so when...
Even Mexico wasn't so different?
No, I just, you know, I went to a restaurant, went back to my room, you know, slept, did it again, went to the stadium, ate, and kind of, you just kind of get in that routine. So you travel from place to place. And so when I went to Japan, my wife was like, on every day off, we would go somewhere. We'd go to, like, you know, the different shrines. We'd go see, like, you know, Kamakura and just see all the culture, you know, and all the bridges and stuff. Like, and every day off, I didn't get to rest. We'd go hiking and do all that stuff. So really, when I went there, it was kind of the first time that I enjoyed, you know, kind of the culture and around, you know, I saw everything that Japan had to offer, and that was really new for me. And I'm like, I should have did that in the States, because I went everywhere. Like, how can I not go? But you're so into the game, and I was just like, I'm just so exhausted. But I was exhausted, but my wife was tougher than me, and she said, you're coming with me.
Well, also the perspective is in when you were in the States, you were trying to get a job.
Yeah.
So you didn't have a lot of room for error there.
Right.
In Japan, you got that Monday off.
Yeah. Every Monday off. And I didn't have to plan it.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to plan it. So she planned everything, and she was, here we're going. You know, here's your football helmet, and let's go. You know, so I was like, all right, I was along for the ride. But, you know, that was one big thing that I look at, and I'm, you know, and we bought so many things at, like, Shrine Sales and you know, all stuff that was, like, really, I mean, I at the time, I was like, why are you buying that? And now it's all displayed, you know, on my shelves in my office, and I just, you know, have such good memories.
When Edgar Gonzalez came back for the second time with the Giants, the Umiri Giants, 2 years ago, I asked him, maybe 3 years ago, I said, well, what does it mean for you to come back to Japan? And he said he had so much respect for the Japanese game. He said playing in Japan made him a better person.
Yeah, I'd go with that. Yeah, you learn respect. Like, everything's based on respect. So it's like, yeah, like, you're not bigger than... Nobody's better than anybody.
Okay.
And so it's like, nobody's bigger than the game. And so you really have to, I mean, it is a humbling game anyway.
Sure.
You know, so, but when you play and you play other people that play different, and you can learn something from everybody. So you're like, yeah, like it does change you.
Now, a lot of, you know, it's funny because, as I said before, people's attitudes in the majors, people who play ball in the majors, their attitudes about Japan, the education level is so much better than it used to be.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I was talking to Chris Capuano 3 weeks ago when he was here with the big leaguers.
Yeah.
And he said, I've been trying to play in Japan. I've been thinking about playing in Japan since 2006.
Yeah.
He came with the Major League All-Star team in 2006.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, my wife and I, we just love the culture. We love the way the Japanese guys approach the game.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, they definitely work hard, that's for sure. Harder than anybody I've ever seen. So, you know, but yeah, it is, you know, it's pretty neat to see, you know, I mean, Japan's won the WBC a couple years, and it's like they're really establishing themselves as, you know, they can play baseball. And so now everybody's respecting that, you know, worldwide. And so it's, you know, I'm like, well, I played there, you know.
Right.
Well, you know, so it makes you feel good. It makes me feel proud, you know, that I was a part of that.
Sure.
You know, so it was a really good experience. I can't say enough.
So when you're trying to sell somebody and go in Japan, what's the sales?
Well, you know, it's not usually, you know, they invite me out there, and I'm kind of the, you know, I kind of help them with adjusting. So any questions they have, you know, and so a lot of the things, like I had Eric Schulstrom, you know, he told me and my wife, oh, here, this is what to look for. And these are the things to bring, and these are the things to do. And this is what's going to happen. And this is normal, and that's normal. So, you know, when I went there and you see all this stuff, and it's, well, that's normal. That's normal, you know, and so that's kind of what I try to do. I try to be that, you know, the answer all the questions that they have, especially, if, you know, a family. It's like, yeah, my daughter was born in Japan, so yeah, we can help you with that stuff. And so that's, it's really neat because you just see the wide-eyed, and it's like, oh my gosh, and that was me. So I try to help them with that.
I always never forget the Colby Lewis story when somebody asked him if he felt pressure pitching in the World Series. And he said, no, that's not pressure. He says, pressure is telling your wife, who's 3 months pregnant, that you've just lost your job, but your new job is in Japan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so she had the baby in Japan?
I don't know, but she was pregnant when he got released,
gosh.
I think.
Not my wife.
I don't know if it was a matter of his was released, but he was sort of...
Yeah,
that's pressure.
That's pressure. You bet.
The best option was Japan at that time, and he was going, what am I going to say?
I know.
I haven't talked to him since he's been back, so I'm really excited to hear.
He's a great group, but that changed him, too. You know, he grew from his experience over there and went over there and was in the World
and
Series.
Bogey.
You know?
I haven't spoken to him either. I keep dying to,
awesome.
But I never been in the right place at the right time.
He grew, too, man.
You know, it's funny because he's told a number of people how much Japanese baseball changed him, and I'm saying, wait, you didn't, you know, you probably pitched, what, 280 innings in 3 years and spent half his time in the Western League.
Yeah.
He was, every time I see him, it was like, Jim, you wouldn't believe this. And it's like, so when are you going to pitch? He says, I don't know, maybe next month sometime in Fukuoka or something.
But, hey, man, it humbles you, you know, and that's kind of what you need, you know. I mean, he had a lot of talent. He learned how to pitch and learned when to use it, when not to. Like, he was just a power guy, and when he got to Japan, he started using finesse. And then, I mean, that power and finesse.
You have to get a lot of patience with these guys who are going to foul off every good pitch you throw.
Yep. And he's definitely shown that he's grown, you know, in his mental aspect of the game.
What a battler he is now.
I know, and then he's got a couple World Series.
All right.
Awesome.
Well, thank you again, Greg, for being allowing yourself to be ambushed in the hotel while you were busy standing around doing nothing.
Thanks a lot, Greg. Hope to see you again soon, buddy.
But he was very gracious, as were all the guys. I could have, if I'd had time, I could have done about 20 or 30 interviews.
Yeah.
I didn't have to write any of them up.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, all you need is about 30 hours in a day, and you can do that.
Indeed. Indeed. But I did get lots of good stuff and heard a lot of good stories. And I was only there during the daytime. I wasn't hanging out in the bar too much late at night. I had to get back to my hotel, which was not the Manchester Grand Hyatt.
Yes.
So anyway, it was great. I'm sure just as much as I did, you were happy to hear Greg LaRocca talking.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I enjoyed just talking to him. And I remember when I sat down with him for the last time for an interview on our show, which I think the first year of JBW, but I don't even remember now that we've got all these years behind us. But I found it, I mean, obviously the funniest thing for me was the opening where he says he's waking up in the morning without the aches and pains. And I'm thinking, yeah, well, you just wait to be until you get to be our age and you'll wake up with some aches and pains for no reason. You didn't have to be.
Well, there's a reason, and that's it's called age.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but no good reason, I should say then.
Fair enough.
But I love the red flag question that you asked him in terms of the scouting purposes. What would be a red flag? And I like the answer he gave. You know, a guy's blowing up at umpires, not respecting authority, and things that you think once you come over to Japan, because he talked a lot about respect in this interview,
yep.
And it's something I don't think we see enough of, or we maybe acknowledge. I always see some of the foreign guys going into the into the batter's box, and they dig a little and they doff the cap the umpires, but the way they do it is so much different from the Japanese players, in my opinion. I'm not sure if you pay attention to the details, but some of these young Japanese players are so respectful as they go up and they bow to the umpire and they bow to the catcher. And then they go in and they dig into the batter's box and they're ready to compete. And I think the foreign players, a lot of times, they're just doing it because everybody else does, but their heart's not in it a little bit. And it comes through in the body language. I don't know if you can say that there's a pronunciation that goes along that coincides with body language, and that their pronunciation isn't as good, if you could make that analogy. Yeah, but you know, blowing up at umpires and being, I guess maybe he's saying that you need someone who's going to be more inclined to embrace or cope and not take up arms at every corner with every problem that they have, because there's so many hurdles to overcome to even getting in a game in Japan and then getting on the field. And for example, it starts when you sign a contract. We had the Tohoku Rakuten Eagles just sign a foreign player, Gabby Sanchez, and he's going to have to show up in February. and they call it spring training, and you start early, and there's a lot of running and a lot of work and a lot of regimen. I mean, there are a lot of hurdles before these guys actually get into games. And I just thought that was the biggest thing for me.
Well, I think, you know, having said that, it occurred to me that, you know, it used to be guys were fairly mixed about coming to Japan. I mean, it meant, you know, the end of an era for most of them. I mean, many guys, of course, did, you know, even when I was very young, the first time I really heard about Japanese baseball, I shouldn't say first time, the second time perhaps, was when Terry Whitfield left the San Francisco Giants to play in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back and played for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, wow, you know, that's not too bad. And Steve Ontiveros left the Giants and went over and played for the Cebu Lions at the same time. And I was thinking, okay, so, but these guys, you know, his career died in Japan, as most people's do. And so a lot of guys, you know, have mixed feelings about coming to Japan, or used to.
Yeah,
but now
it was a career extension point.
Right. Yeah, it was like, I've got no other choices. But now it's almost like, you know, okay, you can't, you're not going to be in, you're going to be a question mark next year. You might be in the majors. You might not be in the majors. You might not be in the majors at all. You might be making $12,000 next year.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go to Japan and make 30 times that, or 40 times that, or 100 times that. And okay.
Yeah, not much
happening. Some people come back.
Yeah.
You know, it's no longer a career death sentence. Yeah. So anyway, so there's a line of people trying to get to Japan. And I was thinking that how it used to be was like, you know, I've got to go through all this for this, you know, to watch my career die.
Right.
And now it's more like, I think the attitude's different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you see in what Greg was saying, he pointed out the three possible instruments for success. One was having hunger. This is, I think, an overview of what he said to you in the entire chat.
Yeah.
But he talked about hunger. He pointed out the culture and the respect factor. And he didn't stress mechanics or talk about this guy's swing is really probably fits. It's suitable for Japan. It's, you know, he's got a flat swing or he's got a long swing. He didn't talk about ability to hit or talk about off-speed stuff. He talked about things that were off the field, basically.
Right. Well, pretty much every scout will tell you the same thing, that if you have the first three and you have some ability, you're going to be able to adapt your game to Japan.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be able to find a way to make what you can do work.
Yeah, and he talked about finding that focus on the field. As long as other things are not distracting you, then you can find the focus on the field, and then you can and be happy. He said, if you're happy, you're going to be able to concentrate and get your job done. So I thought that was interesting.
And that is hard. I mean, being happy is difficult in Japan because there's so many unusual things, and there's so many, you know, people come over here to play baseball, and if you're a pitcher. And as we get in at the end, talked about Ryan Vogel's song.
Mm-hmm.
That I'd let you know that we were talking about Vogie and his adjustments and how he told an AP writer about how much Japanese baseball helped him, which always mystified me because he didn't play a lot. Every time I saw Vogie, as you heard, every time I saw him, he was telling me how much he wasn't pitching and when he didn't know when he was going to pitch, and he spent all his time in the minor leagues.
Mm-hmm.
So where you don't pitch a lot. So it was a case of him not pitching as much as anything. And but the attitude, the point being, you have so many frustrating things you have to deal with.
Yeah.
That if you let those – You really learn to get rid of, you know, you get experience in getting past things that you can't control.
Yeah, I think guys like Alex Ramirez and to an extent Alonzo Powell, those were guys who could compartmentalize and sift through all the madness and focus and find the success, because you had guys like Alex Cabrera and most recently, I think, Kila Kaihue. He really, you ask them how you're doing and all of a sudden, you know, there's a can of worms open and they're pouring onto the field of pent up stress and frustration and resentment.
It seems because his attitude changed. You know, he was this big joyful guy the day he arrived, and 3 months, you know, 6 months later, it was snapping.
Yeah.
I didn't know how much of it was a show and how much of it was real, but I saw him. You know, get it testy over things like, or appear testy. I can't say what people are doing, but him and Brad Eldred, you know, Brad Eldred, he had two bottles of water going out towards the bat, the toss batting before he took BP, and Eldred picked one of them up and started to drink from it, and Kia looked like he was going to knock his head off with a bat.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, you can't ask the guys how they are because the face scrunches up and the whole mood gets kind of ugly and the whole atmosphere. I mean, same with Alex Cabrera. You just felt like you didn't want to ask him how he was doing. You just say, hey, man, how's the frustration level today, instead of asking how he's doing.
Exactly. It does get to you, and it can get to you. And if, as you said, Alex Ramirez is a great example because he not only – dealt, you know, he not only dealt with the kind of bizarre twists that are thrown at you, but he embraced them. Mm-hmm. He said, like, this is Japan, love it.
Yeah, and the other part about Greg's chat was the part about his wife saying, look, you've got every Monday off, we're going to use it to go somewhere. I think, and he said now his office is decorated with all these things that they bought at a lot of these places, and it just... It's such a beautiful story because this is a beautiful country, and you and I, I'm sure you're similar in my situation, that we don't use our days off to actually enrich ourselves with the culture. We're just we find ourselves most of the time just doing busy things and work things and work related things, and we don't take enough time to enjoy. I don't know. I'm just assuming, but
no, we used to do those things, or I should say I used to do those things. It used to be every day off was a day to explore Japan. But, you know, that's not – I'm embracing it a little more. You know, when I went to Fukuoka in December, I walked around the city quite a bit. It's basically trying to get exercise, but, you know, see parts of the cities. I used to – you know, people say, oh, you know Osaka. You go to Osaka a lot. It says, yeah, I know Umeda Station where I stand. I know Koshien where I go to work.
Right. Yeah, it's the same here. You know, I know how to get to Yokohama Stadium, but I don't know all the best restaurants to go around it, because I usually go home afterwards because it's so far from where I live. I just want to get back. You know, I don't want to get trapped and have the last train take off on me and have to stay in a hotel somewhere. So
yeah, so that was interesting, and I remember a lot of people talking about the cultural impact. Kind of takes them by surprise how much they enjoy living in a different country. And of course, I did have a theory in the past about how Latin players had an advantage coming to Japan, because for them it wasn't the first time they've had to try to play baseball in a foreign, you know, surrounded in a foreign culture.
Which I wholeheartedly agreed with. Yeah,
and it seems that it's normal for them. But then, you know, a lot of the guys who come here who do succeed have been playing in winter ball here and there. And I don't think anybody comes to Japan these days, you know, having not played overseas.
Right.
But anyway, it was quite interesting. It was great to catch up with Greg. When I was in the U.S., one of the big topics was Ryan Vogelsong, because I was trying to sort of poll everybody I talked to, you know, how can these players use what they learn in Japan to get better in the States?
Mm-hmm.
And another, you know, that was topic A, and topic B was, what is it with Japanese hitters, and, you know, why is their transition more difficult than Japanese pitchers? So that one we didn't get into too much with Greg, but more on that later.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for doing the interview. Great that you were able to do it. And I'm sorry that we weren't able to get it on earlier, like last year when you did it, but still a good interview. Now, I want to talk about Oryx, because, and especially because when I was preparing the show notes, I think I put down the question, do you see a plan when you look at the Buffaloes? And particularly, I'm thinking the past 2 years, the last year in the off season and this year in the off season going into this coming season. Mm-hmm. Do you see a plan with that team? Because, you know, that's the thing I would probably ask Greg right now is, well, what do you want out of your imported, for him it's export, I guess, I don't know. but what do you want out of the foreign players here? Do you want simply power? Do you want to bring speed in the Esteban Herman kind of mold? What is it that you want to do with the foreign players? How do you want to develop the team in terms of, you want to make it a speed team, a power team, or you want guys just to get on base and raise the on-base percentage? Is that what you want to do, or is it OPS that you want to do? What's the plan? Do you see a plan?
Well, no, I think Oryx's plan was to get out the checkbook this year, you know.
Well, this year, yeah. That's what I mean. These past 2 years, do you see a plan? I mean, obviously.
No, but what I see with Oryx is productive action. Well, not the best, not the most planned action. I don't see a particular plan, I think, but I see people being open-minded to talent and making offers. This is not old Oryx. Old Oryx would have gone for whatever secondhand free agent junk was available among Japanese players.
Yikes. Put up.
You know, and say like, you know, what guys were released, basically. You know, what guys were released who would want to play for Oryx? They don't even have to be good.
Hashtag boom.
Well, something like
he
that.
He just got blowed up.
Well, that was the thing. And I hear, you know, Oryx has always been a mass of, contradictions.
Yeah.
I've had the greatest respect for their ability to find good amateur pitchers. I mean, they've just had some tremendous pitchers.
I don't see a particular plan either. And like you said, the plan this year was to follow the SoftBank model and try to open up the checkbook a little bit, loosen the purse strings, and take out the cash and take out the trash. I guess they were getting rid of guys they didn't think foreign guys they didn't think were going to be productive. But you know, often these players, when they start doing their pre-camp individual workouts, the media is invited to watch them swing a bat and run, and they all gather and flock. So Yoshio Itoe, the reigning batting champion in the Pacific League, was asked to use one kanji symbol or Chinese character to symbolize what he wants to do or what his aim is for this season. And he wrote the simplest kanji of all, which was the kanji for the numeral one. Mm. And he said, of course, he just says he wants the team to play as one this year. You know, it's a phrase we often hear in Japan. But he didn't say it. But of course, I'm sure it's implied that, well, he wants the team to be number one in the league, and then number one after all is said and done in the postseason as well. But before that, I think the organization and management and including the scouts and everybody have to have one vision. That was my take on the thing, and I don't see that. I don't know that there's one vision. I don't know that there's one master plan.
One vision is pretty rare, and it's pretty rare in baseball because I mean you're talking about a collective, 60, 70 people in an organization, at least in the decision-making body, a whole bunch of people.
Well, how about One Direction?
Yeah, One Direction, I'll go with that. But yeah, still, unity is hard to come by. It's great when you get it. I think it helps to have somebody who's a good communicator somewhere in the loop.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who is not necessarily a visionary, but somebody who's good at sort of keeping tabs on what people are up to and where they want to go. Oryx hasn't had that in the past. Even when Akira Ogi was the manager, he was kind of a one man show. Mm-hmm. You know, he communicated with his coaches, but with the front office, we never know. He didn't really communicate with the players all that much about anything. You know, he was I'll tell you what to do when I want you to do it.
Right, and you do it and don't say anything.
And that's pretty typical. The Giants are kind of an unusual, or maybe a little more open in that respect, in that they seem to have a lot of good communication. Hara sets a tone for where the organization wants to go, which is probably why they have a zillion second basemen at every level. But, you know, they couldn't protect all of them, so the Swallows grabbed a their farm second baseman yesterday as a free agent compensation. They said, well, you're not going to use them. We'll take them.
Yeah. Well, we could use one of those. Of course, they can't, but maybe they can put him in another spot on the field or something. But, you guys got enough.
It's really a bright future with Yakult either, but... Yeah, as far as having a direction, it's pretty rare in Japan. It's more, I guess the Fighters do, and I guess the Giants do, but it's pretty rare. Oryx has been, however, the story of Oryx has been great talent, no direction. Great talent, miscommunication, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
No plan. Speaking to Oryx coaches, it's always a case of, who are your pitchers? Well, we don't really know. You know, we know the pitchers are, but we don't know what we really want to do. We haven't decided on how they're going to be a best fit. Now, they do have ideas, but they just seem never to be able to turn those ideas into results. And now, anyway, fast forwarding, there has been a shakeup in the Oryx front office. And I don't know how to say this with all due respect, but the guy who's running it has a kind of a track record for being divisive. Mm-hmm. Who is Ryuzo Setoyama, who's a supermarket. Basically, he rose to fame as a supermarket manager.
But that's
a bit. He was running. Yeah, he sort of revolutionized the way the Daiei store supermarkets in Kobe sold meat.
Well, I was going to say
that's how he became a baseball executive.
Well, that's good because we talked about compartmentalizing earlier, and now he can departmentalize. I mean, he can say, okay, this is the meat section, this is the produce section.
Okay.
We got dry goods and grains and beans over here. I mean, I think that's a good plan because he can say these guys are good at this. Let's let them do this.
Well. Yeah.
I don't know about evaluating talent, but
right. Well, there's none of that.
Yeah, and the business aspect I like.
Well, he was basically promoted. He of course then got a job with the Daiei Hawks, who owned the supermarket that owned the baseball team, and then he got run out of there, and then he went to Lotte, and he was instrumental in the Marines. Basically throwing the 2009 season.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, that was the Bobby Valentine situation, right?
Yeah, basically. But the White Sox did look pretty tame. They threw the entire season. They basically tried to lose so they could avoid paying Bobby Valentine X millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And so he was instrumental in that. And then he got run out of there. And the story is for taking kickbacks. So, and I don't know that that's true, but there were very serious charges leveled against him and his protege, a former Daiei guy, mm-hmm. Mr. Ishikawa. So he left out of the, he got out of there, and then he went to Oryx, and now he's in charge. And I know people, old Oryx guys are not really happy with him, but he brought in a bunch of guys who were not big baseball names, he hired somebody who hired these guys. And I was very impressed with the intelligence of the Oryx scouting department. I mean, these guys are like really involved in, these are the kind of things we need. This is the kind of analytics we're doing. These are the kind of scouting reports we want. You know, they were talking on a very high level, not just, we're trying to suit our needs, and without, they weren't vague at all.
Mm-hmm. They were specific. Mm, interesting.
Very sharp, very intelligent. They were very clear.
Okay, yeah, we have 2+ months before we have to make our predictions before we're going to make our predictions for the season. And this is something I'll take into account as I ponder the choices. But it's, I like obviously the fact that the Buffaloes opened up the purse strings or loosened the purse strings and they're looking forward, looking to gather talent. I'm not sure the level of talent they got, but they certainly added depth to a team that was already close to a championship last year. So we'll keep an eye on that.
They added some guys who could be really good. Of course, they've got Hiroyuki Nakajima who can be pretty good. I imagine he's going to be, he's lost 2 years, but he's also learned some stuff. So I think... to be succinct for a change, they may lack distraction, they may lack direction, and it seems like they were just getting every big name they could.
Mm-hmm.
Scoop up everybody who didn't go to either the Giants or the Hawks. They got Brian Bullington, they got Tony Blanco, they got, who else did they get? They got, well,
Eiichi Koyama, yeah.
That one doesn't.
Like I said, depth.
Depth, yeah, depth. He's a depth guy.
We'll call him Johnny Depth.
Very good. I like that. Johnny Depth. Maybe he'll bring back the Manny Ramirez dreadlocks this year.
Oh, no. All right, well, let's move on. I think, yeah, we've gotten enough of the Oryx experience here, but good luck to them. All right, so the inductees to the Hall of Fame are set to be announced on the 23rd here in January.
Yes.
And I saw some of the first-timers on the ballot, Satoru Komiyama, former mm-hmm. Lotte Marines pitcher, Kazuyoshi Tatsunami, and then, Tuffy Rhodes, and then some question marks, some Koichi Ogata, who's now the manager of the Hiroshima Carp, and Norihiro Akahoshi, former outfielder and speedster for the Hanshin Tigers. And I'm thinking, do they just say, okay, well, we're going to just put these guys on the list because it's, I mean, Jeff Williams... I mean,
well, they're eligible is why they're
just because they're eligible. I mean, come on, man. I mean,
that's the way it works. You're eligible. You're eligible. There's no two standards of eligibility. Well, however, I don't know how it is in Japan. I don't think you get dropped from the ballot like you do in the U.S.
Mm.
You don't get 5% of the vote. You're dropped from the ballot. You know, Carlos Delgado. Sorry. Bam.
Yeah. We saw that news this morning.
Right.
See you, punk. Thanks for playing.
Fuck. Wow. So
essentially, that's what they said, right?
So the guys stick around, but yeah, I don't think Jeff Williams is going to get any votes, and I might get one. And Akahoshi's kind of an interesting character because he was a good player for several years on a surprisingly good team. And neck injury ended his career.
Yeah.
But his career was in decline at that stage anyway. He was an older player when he was drafted.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see him as a Hall of Fame. And the reason I don't see him as a Hall of Fame player is essentially because there are so many guys who aren't Hall of Fame players in Japan. I mean, there's so many guys who aren't in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Because it's just such a bottleneck to get in. There's so many great players who just were going to have a hard time, will never get in. So it's hard to see guys like Akahoshi who were, briefly perhaps the best player on the team, but not much more than that.
Yeah. Well, so, I would put Kazuyoshi Tatsunami, I think, and Tuffy Rhodes, both of these guys deserve to be in as quickly as possible. I think Tatsunami even before Tuffy, because simply he came out of high school, I believe, and stepped immediately into a starting role and was a major success for a long time.
Yeah, he was Rookie of the Year, won his only Golden Glove at shortstop as a rookie, mm-hmm. and he realized that he couldn't play shortstop.
Right, yeah. Here's your Gold Glove, punk. Went
Golden Glove at shortstop and then get moved to second base the next year.
Yeah, here's your Gold Glove, chump. Now move over here. You're not very good.
Exactly. That's the way Gold Glove, it was one of those things. Everybody couldn't stop talking about Tatsunami, and then they couldn't move him from shortstop fast enough. He didn't have a shortstop's arm.
Yeah.
It's just, he was just an agile guy who looked good making the plays as opposed to actually making the plays.
Yeah. And he's the all-time leader in doubles with 487 and career 285 hitter and all-around stud, if you know what I mean. So, I mean, he deserves to go out of your
keep
face.
Keep him away from the booze. Yeah.
Hide the women in the booze. But
basically. Then he's, yeah. I mean, that's the story. Is the reason why he isn't managing the Dragons is just because he had troubles in the past. Yeah. And Tyrone Woods told me he's past that.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know in his retired career whether he's past it or not, but I think he's a surefire Hall of Famer. I think Tuffy Rhodes definitely. Tuffy Rhodes is the first foreign player the first foreign player to be elected as a player and not as anything else.
Be elected if he were.
Well, the reason I say that is because we have Wally Onamine, but he was voted in after his consideration of his playing ability had expired.
What are you saying, though? You think Tuffy is in?
I think he will be in.
Aha. Uh-huh. So you're just counting him in, because I just had him, as a nominee and that he might be inducted.
Well, I certainly think he's worthy. And I think he might make it.
Really? Okay. All right. So you're kind
of. He has, of course, the divisiveness of that, there'll be somebody saying, well, you remember the time when Giants coach Hirata was giving him some stick and he picked him up by the collar and held him up against the wall after the, in the team meeting in Fukuoka?
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't sound like a Hall of Famer to me, Bill.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the 464 Jacks, and I mean, we know he played more than 10 years, and We won't hold the Yomiuri years against him. How's that? But
I mean, if you look at his career accomplishments, there is essentially nobody who isn't in the Hall of Fame who's as good as him.
Yeah.
And that's hard to say in Japan. Yeah. I mean, there are exceptions, but again, it's a bottleneck. Now, right now, I don't see the class as being particularly strong. I don't see the selection. I think this year, the big name, I think the two people who will go in this year are Tatsunami and Furuta.
Yes, Atsuya.
Who was number two. Hara is
a former Yakult Swallows catcher.
Tatsunari Hara is now the manager of the Giants, and he's been a successful manager of the Giants, and he deserves credit for that. However, his managerial accomplishments cannot be considered at this time.
Right.
So he cannot be elected on the strength of being a manager. He's basically been holding steady as the second banana in the voting for a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, he is 20th, or he's tied for 20th on the all-time home run list, which I didn't really know that he had hit 382 homers. That's good stuff. But yeah, I don't know that he's all Hall of Fame worthy. I never thought of him as that. I just thought of him as a really good player.
Well, he was a really good player, but he was famous, which is, I guess, part of the thing. If you're going to be in the Hall of Fame, you should be famous. Masaki Saito is an interesting one too. And I'll tell you, a really interesting thing was there was a story about Masaki Saito, Kimiyasu Kudo, Hiromi Makihara, and Hisanobu Watanabe in the early 90s. These guys are all in more or less the same generation of pitchers. I mean, and Kudo retired like 3 years ago.
Right. Yes. You know, he was another guy who wanted to pitch and get a win at the age of 50. Like,
right. You know, right. He wanted to pitch in major leagues at the age of 50. So, these guys, they all got to, I think, 150 wins, like at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, they're counting down now to 200. And I'm thinking, these guys are toast most of
them. Yeah, they're baked. Take them out.
Well, the thing was, they weren't. They were rolling. They were steamrolling at 150, but they fell off the table. Saito's arm fell off. Makihara's arm fell off. Watanabe lost all his control. Ended up being an MVP in Taiwan. Yeah, so these things, that's the way things used to be in Japan. I think that norm is changing, but I thought it was interesting when...
All right, well, that's interesting.
He splits that.
Yeah.
But you could vote for more than one guy, so that's the thing. They could both go in. But I think Furuta this year, Furuta and Tatsunami, Saito's a possibility. Hara's also a possibility. Mm. But again, because he doesn't get credit for being a manager. I think Tuffy Rhodes will get support. And the reason I think Tuffy Rhodes is going to get support, and maybe this is kind of interesting, is that in the experts category, which has not elected anybody – they didn't elect anybody this year. They've been electing people pretty regularly in the past. There's no real outstanding candidates. You know, they needed 73 votes last year. 97 people voted. There were 112 people on the committee.
Mm-hmm.
These are former Hall of Fame. These are basically living Hall of Famers. The last person, I guess, is Soto Koba, the carp ace of the 70s.
Okay.
And Yutaka Ono went in a couple of years ago. Those guys went in, but right now it's Hiramatsu Masaji, who was a great, great pitcher of the early 70s.
Right.
He's got 50 votes. He may go in, but the reason I have hope for the foreigners is Randy Bass, who didn't really – I'll say this. Randy Bass did not have a Hall of Fame career in Japan. He was a two-time Triple Crown winner.
Yeah.
He was a big, big figure, but he's – more than a third of the people are voting for him. In the experts committee. Now, experts aren't, you know, they're former players.
Mm-hmm.
So they hold him in fairly high esteem. But I wonder about the sports writers and Tuffy Rhodes. That's going to be a good one. But I think, you know, there's always hope. I think he's certainly, if you look at the categories of people who, the foreign players, after Wally Onomina, who deserved to be in the Hall of Fame, Tuffy Rhodes, maybe maybe Leron Lee, who's not getting any support from the old guys.
Yeah.
Boomer, maybe. Yeah, Boomer.
Boomer's still on there, yeah.
I think those three. I think Tuffy and Lee and Alex Ramirez. Alex Ramirez will go, definitely, because of his, you know, his love of things Japanese.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I find it fascinating that you already have Tuffy Rhodes going in, and I hope that's the case. And
it might take 6 or 7 years, and I think what Tuffy, you know, I'll tell you, you know what would make Tuffy Rhodes a Hall of Famer? Is if he started coming back to Japan all the time.
Yeah, I haven't seen him since he left. That's
right.
The point.
If he's back here, like, and doing, you know, and reminded, you know, and being in the public eye, like Randy Bass is with his, you know, coming every year to play golf.
Or he plays in the old timers games and he does beer commercials. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So if Tuffy Rhodes had any kind of PR thing going on here, and any just coming back here and, you know, and going to camp as a coach.
Yeah. I'll get in touch with him right away. I can get him on that.
he'd be in the Hall of Fame in 5 years.
Okay. All right, let's move on. I want to talk about Takashi Toritani rejoining or staying with or whatever you want to call it. Coming back to the Hanshin Tigers, he shunned the thought of being a scrounge / fringe big league player and decided to stick with the Hanshin Tigers. And even though he opted to file for free agency and try to go to the major leagues, and I think I said it all along. He's 33. He's a middle.
34.
Yeah, we're going to be 34. He's a middle infielder. He's not going to be looked at as an everyday player, no matter how well he did over here. And so I think it's good for both him and the team that he's going to stay and go back. I think Hanshin played it cool. I think they kind of counted on the fact that he wasn't going to want to make this move. I don't think the offers were as good as we were led to believe, and I think in the media I read multiple teams were interested and I guess showing interest was the way that they phrased it all the time.
That's the accurate way to put it. Nobody had him on their to get list.
Right.
He was on a list of people to get.
I don't even think he was plan B in situations. I think he was plan C.
He was
C.
just on a list. You know, he was just on the board of players who could, you know, who were potential solutions for holes.
Yeah.
So, no, he wasn't. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. So I'm just thinking that's a great get back, I guess, because there's good gets when you get in player acquisitions, but I think that's a good get back for him, the Hanshin Tigers, to get him back on the field for them heading in the next season after a season in which they had a lot of success and they have some quality players coming back and they can just build on the situation that they had last year. I think that's a good. It's good for both him and the team. What's your thoughts on it?
Well, I tend to take exception with our saying, with people saying it's best for him.
Oh, yeah, I know you do, and I often say those things. I say this guy should do this. It's best for him.
And I take that. But having seen that that's his decision, I think that's his. He agrees with you. So he's best positioned to know what's best for him.
No,
so.
Wait a minute though. You're saying it's his decision. I don't think it really was. I think the writing was on the wall. I wrote the blog post yesterday. I said, well, the announcement came on Thursday, but the writing had been on the wall for a long time. I really didn't think.
How come that's not his decision?
Because I think he really wanted to go. I think the teams just didn't offer him what he wanted, and I think they made the decision for him.
So it's his decision to go to the Tigers, even though he still wants to be in the majors?
I see where you're coming from, and I understand what you're saying.
He decided to come back to the Tigers because he didn't like the offers. That's his decision.
I see what you're saying, what did Judge Wapner used to say? I've read your complaint, and I understand it. But I'm just saying that I think had he... You know, obviously the teams that were making the offers that he didn't like made those decisions first, and he reacted to them. I don't think, you know, had he gotten a situation where the offers were 50-50, you know, the pros and the cons were 50-50. I could go to the States, and this is a pretty good deal, or I could stay with Hanshin, and this is a pretty good deal. Which one would he have accepted? But the situation was that they weren't even.
I think the
Hanshin situation was better all the way around. You didn't have to go and learn new players, new maybe a new position, new pitchers, new situations, new ballparks. Everything's familiar if he stays with Hanshin, whereas he's going to get probably less money, no guaranteed playing time, and have to adjust to a lot more in the States. I don't think that's a good situation. But, yeah, I hear what you're saying. It was his decision to come back to Hanshin, but I think it was based on the decisions that these teams made in the States not to pay him a lot of money and not to give him a lot of playing time or guarantee that he was going to be able to play on a daily basis.
Right. Well, I think you stated the point very well. But I'm saying that he still had a choice. Now, what's best for him is, I think you have to break that down into a number of different things. I think which you have done. I think you have to consider what's best for his family.
Mm-hmm.
And that's. Now, I don't know what his family situation is, honestly, so I don't know the details there. He was single until recently.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of money, there's no way he's going to make more money in the States. There's no way a Japanese infielder is going to make more money in the States as a first-year player than he's making in Japan right now.
Mm.
So that's part of it. The playing time is another issue. And so I think given that, if his goal was to play in the majors, then he would have signed by now.
Okay. Yeah.
But if his goal was a little more complex and, he always had that Tigers fallback. And I thought before I spoke with Scott Boras in December, I thought that he could, given the fact that the Tigers would have taken him back,
mm-hmm.
On March 30th.
Right. Season opener. Just step right, right in. Step
exactly.
Right in. Yes.
Exactly. The Tigers would have taken him back on March 30th. Therefore, he could have gone. He could have taken a minor league invite
mm-hmm.
had he wanted to do that. But he left the Tigers. He basically said when he left, don't close the door. He wanted to come back as, it was his two options were the Tigers and the big leagues. So he said, look, in exchange for, keeping the door open, I'm not going to keep you waiting.
Right.
And so he had that, he needed to make a deal. And I think also the teams knew he needed to make a deal.
Mm.
That was public knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So, they're thinking, well, if he wants to make a deal, we can get him for, half a million less a year than we normally might pay, than he's actually worth.
Right.
And as far as, how well he would do in the States, and I think your analysis is accurate to the point of what the teams think about him before he gets to camp.
Mm-hmm.
What they think about him after he's in camp is a whole different matter. Nobody's going to know that.
Right, right.
So, yeah. So I think they were looking at him, when you're saying they're looking at him as this fill-in guy at second base who can also play a little shortstop and can get on base and do that kind of stuff or whatever. That's accurate from the point of view of, looking at comparing him to other players, but once you get into camp, all bets are off because they're going to see, what kind of player he is.
That's true.
And I think he would do. I think he would actually do quite well in the States. But
I do too. It's just hard to get over the age and the other aspects that come with the package.
Sure.
And a lot of people are going to judge by the package.
Sure.
And
the track, the established value of Japanese infielders is pretty low.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but that's just the way it is. So.
All right. Well, what's your opinion on this thing? We haven't had a fielding questions in a long time. How about you guys send us in a question, yakyujohn@gmail.com, or leave us a note on the Facebook page. Let us know what you want us to do on the show, if you want us to change anything, if you want us to get rid of the trivia or keep the trivia going, because I'm thinking I want to get rid of the trivia. Anyway, let us know. Your input will help the show.
Yeah, be like John. Tell us what we should do. Tell us what's best for us.
That's right.
Because we don't know.
Yes, because we need you to evaluate from a distance. All right. Well, thanks for joining us for the first show of the year. And thank you, Jim, for getting up and taping on the Saturday morning. Appreciate it.
No, I usually get up on Saturday morning. No problem.
All right. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks, guys. Thanks for listening and enjoy your off season.
Ciao.
One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.